You are now entering Zone 4. Please be seated and prepare to experience the nerd aristocracy. Any offences encountered by today's broadcast will not be the responsibility of the Mars Civex Consolidated Drilling Corporation or its subsidiaries.
Welcome to the Nerd Aristocracy, the podcast for all things nerd. Available worldwide at nerdaristocracy.com.
And now,
the leaders of the nerd proletariat, your esteemed hosts, Jonathan Dell and Ryan Reinecke.
All right, our guest tonight, Jason O'Brien, is a filmmaker whose latest film called After the Torment has appeared at multiple film festivals, including the Glovebox International Film Festival, Sidewalk Film Festival, and Brownfish Short Film Festival in New York City. You can check it out, including the trailer, at beautifultorment.com. And in addition to being a filmmaker, he is a film historian and an Academy Awards expert. He is the host of a podcast called Oscar Oscar. Jason O'Brien, everybody. Jason, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks, Jonathan, for that nice intro.
Very cool.
He's good with those. He's a very good presenter. Yes.
It must be the stand-up comedy hosting experience, you know, bringing people onto the stage. Anyway, Jason, what's the latest? I know there was a shakeup with regards to the Oscar lineup originally. Eddie Murphy was supposed to host. I hear that's changed now. What's happened?
Yeah, it's been a crazy couple days with what's been going on. Basically, it started when Brett Ratner, who was one of the co-producers with Don Mischer of the Oscars, he had made some comment. I can't remember exactly where it was. I think he was doing press for his new movie, Tower Heist, and he made some comment using a gay slur, talking about rehearsal and that kind of thing. And, you know, in this day and age, you just don't really do those kinds of things. And he immediately apologized for it, but you know how these things get.
Too late.
Yeah. Once it's out there, it's out there. And when you're the Academy, I mean, they're very careful about their image, and they basically came out and, you know, they had talked to him and were saying that, you know, it was interesting how they made a statement first that Academy President Tom Chirac said, you know, we've talked to Brett Ratner, you know, we feel he won't do this again, but they were very strict about how they were. Some of their language is just very interesting. So everybody kind of anticipated that, you know, something was probably going to happen here.
Kind of like a pre-washing hands.
Yeah, sort of like, or sort of, in a lot of ways, I think what they were trying to do was they really wanted to get rid of him, but they kind of wanted to let him do it on his terms. So by issuing that statement, you know, that kind of let Brett Ratner know that they were really not happy with him and would probably just like to let this go away because it was one of those things that might, you know, stick with it, you know, and here they are trying to go into the, you know, Oscar season, and here they've got this stain on there. So
now how important is the specific producer? I mean, we all know that there's 100 producers on one of these broadcasts,
right?
But how much of a creative element or sway or influence does a guy like Ratner have over the actual production itself?
They actually have a lot when it comes to the Oscars. When they hire a producer, that's usually like the first step they'll do, and they usually give the producer a lot of leeway to. I mean, sometimes they have a single producer. In recent years, it seems like they've gone with a pair of producers because it is a monumental task, you know, to try to put one of these telecasts together. And the Academy kind of gives them basic guidelines and says, you know, there are these certain things we have to do. You know, we have to present so many awards, you know, we have to do this. But the producer is kind of the visionary, you know, trying to come up with some kind of theme. You know, so once you see an Oscar telecast and you're watching sort of what they've put together, that's really the producer's work.
How they deliver that content.
Yeah, how they're delivering that, what kind of stamp they want to put on it, you know, how they're going to make it look, how they want to arrange things. The Academy usually gives them a lot of control.
What is the main difference you've seen, or the biggest difference you've seen between, not necessarily a back-to-back year where they change producers, but was there almost a drastic change from one producer to the next in recent years?
I mean, you see some. I mean, when it comes to the Oscars, I mean, you're really, for the most part, you're seeing a lot of the same elements.
Sure.
But if you can think of, there was one year, I think it was just a couple of years ago, when they, a structure that I really liked when, it was the year Slumdog Millionaire won, where they actually kind of presented the awards in the order of like how a film is made. You know, like they gave the writing awards first because it starts with a screenplay. Mm. And they kind of explained like the elements of each category. Here's what a sound designer does, because a lot of people out there, Joe Q Public's like, now we're up to the award of best sound mixing. Well, they don't know what a sound mixer is. You know,
right.
So it was very helpful how they actually kind of explained, here are examples of, that's what a producer did. I mean, that was, you know, coming up with a show like that. But then you go back to, you know, like 1988, that infamous year when Rob Lowe performed with Snow White. You know, that was Alan Carr's decision as the producer that year. So a producer, you know, definitely leaves a kind of stamp on the show. And you can kind of tell the difference when a new producer is kind of brought on.
So when Ratner was out, was that the main reason why Eddie Murphy jumped ship?
There was immediate speculation because, you know, Brett Ratner and Eddie Murphy were close, and of course they worked on the new Tower Heist movie. So, you know, that was Brett Ratner's choice, because that's usually a producer, that's the first job they really do, is to find the host and start working with a particular host. And so it was already rumored that once Brett Ratner did decide to resign from it, that a lot of people were saying, well, I wonder if Eddie will stay. And it was just within the next day that Eddie announced that he wouldn't be part of it either.
That's kind of
disappointing. I was really looking forward to seeing what Eddie Murphy would.
I don't think anybody's seen Eddie Murphy in years, like in a live environment like that with that many people of that caliber. You know, that would have been interesting. I this is news to me. I'm very retarded about the pop culture, so I'm gonna be the more retarded of our listeners and ask the simple questions.
Yeah.
What did he say? I need to know.
Oh.
You said gay slurs. Can you break that down for me?
Yeah, I can.
What was the context?
It's one of those. It's so interesting how it seems like certain words we can't, you know, even if we're just talking about it, like reporting the news of it.
Yeah,
you know,
that's difficult
to say that. But it's basically a word that, I mean, in the 80s, Eddie Murphy used in his stand-up routines. But he basically, Brett Ratner's statement was, he said, they were talking about, I think they asked him the question, do you like to rehearse for your movies? And he made some comment that said, rehearsal is for fags, was the statement that he made.
Yeah, okay.
And the other thing that they criticized him for doing was going on the Howard Stern show and talking about his sex life. You know, so it was kind of this image thing with the Academy. You know, they just kind of felt that this was kind of degrading the institution.
He's not a politician. I mean, he's a Hollywood guy.
Hire Brett Ratner. I mean, you got to kind of know. I mean, he is kind of this party guy, and you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, 40% of the support, you know, people of Hollywood are gay, and you know, the other 40% are Jewish, and then the other 20% are Jewish and gay. So, I mean, that should be taken as just like, oh, you know, among everybody in Hollywood, like, oh, well, yeah, he's just saying. You know, I mean, that's more of like a football thing anyway. Like, practice is for pussies, you know?
Yeah, right.
Like, I mean, are a bunch of women going to get up in arms over a statement like that? I don't, people are too
sensitive. Well, on the one hand, I can understand, like, when you're being interviewed for different things, and especially, like, if you're – I don't think he said it on the Howard Stern show that particular
Yeah, what time. Was the context, the rehearsal is for fags?
I haven't heard, like, Good Morning America, or
–
I don't think so. I think it was just during maybe a press junket or something.
Yeah.
When he got that question, I didn't hear exactly when it occurred, but it's one of those things, like, you know, when you get in those kind of live situations, sometimes, you know, you're not always thinking straight. You know,
you got to censor yourself.
You'll say things off the cuff, and you know, because we all have things that we say and
that's a shame because I mean the thing that makes that person and a creative force is, I was thinking about this today, like. From Pulp Fiction, the Wolf character,
Harvey Keitel's
character. You know, I think fast, I talk fast. You know, it's like I'm not trying to be mean.
Right.
This is just how my brain works, and the mouth is connected, and this is what makes me the fucking wolf. You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And actually, I had something very, very kind of similar. the other day at where I work. We're looking at producing a pinup kind of calendar, mm-hmm. and I'm looking through Model Mayhem with two other people that are going to be working on it with me. And I just got this job like 4 or 5 weeks ago, and mm-hmm. Looking at it with this photographer and this this other girl that's going to be helping me produce it. And we're looking at these things, and I'm like, okay, oh, there's this chick. Oh, she's got a pretty face, but she's built like a 12-year-old boy. And then I just go on to the next one, and I realize the girl standing there next to me is built like a 12-year-old boy.
Right. Yeah.
And that is that's just terrible.
But I don't think you're necessarily representing the Academy. I'm more surprised.
Not yet.
I'm more surprised at the fact that they got mad at him for saying the gay slur than going on Howard Stern. I could see where if you're going to be involved with the Academy Awards and all the glitz and the glamour, holding off on the Howard Stern interview until afterwards. But, you know, like Jason mentioned with the movie coming out and Tower Heist, of course it was bound to happen. Yeah. But so who is your early pick for host? I mean, this episode might not come out until after that news has been released, but go ahead and toss your thought out there as to your leading candidates.
Yeah, they did. I was amazed too how quickly they got a producer in to replace him. They got Brian Grazer.
I don't know who that is. Who's Brian Grazer? A producer, I take it. Hello?
Jason?
Wow. He must really love Brian Grazer. Hopefully he'll call back. He just got dropped somehow.
Okay.
We're just going to hold the line. I'll keep everything going right now. I don't know who Brent Ratner is either.
That's all right.
Okay.
I can look him up on IMDb.com. Brent Ratner, you say?
Yeah, Ratner.
Brett Ratner is the director.
Yeah, X- he's producing the
X-Men: The Last Stand.
Oh, okay.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, man. Sorry about that. I guess we got our internets crossed somewhere.
Okay.
Okay. So
I thought you were really pissed off because I didn't hear about who you got to replace. I was like, So who is that guy, Jason? Jason. What did I say? So I'm sorry. They replace Ratner with who?
Brian Grazer.
Brian Grazer.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what fame is he from? What might I be familiar with his work?
Oh, anytime, pretty much any film of Ron Howard's that has been made, they're a producing partner, like Beautiful Mind.
Okay.
You know, I don't know why I'm drawing blank on Ron Howard's films. Back
Da Vinci Code and
American Gangster.
Yeah.
Wasn't Grazer also, didn't he do like 24 or something?
Oh, that does sound familiar. I think he may have. I'm not as familiar with the television credentials, but yeah, right. I know he's been doing a lot. I mean, he's clearly very talented, and he'll you can recognize him from the spiky hair if you ever see a picture of him.
So what about the host? I mean, Murphy, that's kind of tough to kind of come up with a replacement.
Like I said, yeah, we were talking about, you know, how Eddie Murphy would have been a great choice, and career-wise, I think this would have been a really good thing for him, too. I mean, to really kind of get back that edge and, you know, that I think a lot of people, you know, when you see Norbit and, you know, mm-hmm. films like that, that he's kind of lost over the years.
Yeah, kind of get some cred back.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Eddie Murphy's career is kind of like this thing that comedians talk about. Like, do you think Eddie will ever come back? You know, people talking like they know him, even though nobody knows him. But it's just that thing that comedians talk about in the green room. You know, we'll be talking about the greats and, you know, it'll be Carlin and Pryor, and then somebody will mention Eddie Murphy, and then somebody will say, hey, do you ever think he's coming back? Will he ever do another set?
Eddie Murphy's a myth. I've never seen the man.
But I think people will know well in advance, because, you know, he'll be popping into, you know, the Comedy Cellar or the Improv or wherever.
Yeah, those people that are there, but on such a national scale like this, global.
But,
like,
I mean, as small as the entertainment show business is now with the internet and the web and everything, if he shows up at the Improv, you know, in LA at 3 o'clock in the morning on a Wednesday, by Thursday at lunchtime, everybody will know that Eddie Murphy is getting back into stand-up comedy.
Right
now.
Yeah.
But anyway, tell us a little bit about After the Torment.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a short film that actually started as a feature. I wrote a feature film called Beautiful Torment. It was a project that I've been trying to write for a number of years and finally got completed, I trying to remember, I think in 2008. And what I wanted to try to do, because I'd already been through the process of trying to raise money for an independent film, and so I wanted to do everything different, you know, this time. You know, it was a film that I really wanted to make, and so I thought we could go ahead and cast the film, try to get a package together for the film, you know, if we had a cast and all that.
So what kind of budget were you shooting for?
$150,000, which is actually a pretty low budget.
Pretty modest, yeah.
Independent film, but you'll be amazed how hard it is to try to get that together.
No, you're talking to two creative guys that understand.
It's incredibly frustrating.
Sure. See, getting like, 5,000 is hard. So
yeah, it really is. And I mean, on the first film that I did, my first feature, you know, we had a budget of about $81,000, and tried to piece it together from so many different investors, and I just trying to keep up with that for tax reasons and all of that is just is such a mess. And I so did not want to do that again. You know, to try to put together 12 or 15 investors, you know. So, you know, part of that has been part of the problem of why it's been taking so long. But we finally came up with an idea that maybe we could shoot a short film, because if you think about it, so many feature films got their start as short films because, you know, I can think of District 9 as the one that first comes to mind where it was a short film, and I think Spielberg saw it.
Really? I had no idea about that.
Yeah, he saw the short film, and he saw the potential in it from that short film and basically helped get that feature made.
Well, yeah, because you can get across your theme and your feel and, you know, the context.
Yeah, so what we did was we took, you know, just a couple of the characters from the feature, and I wrote a new script kind of imagining what might have happened to these two characters after, so they can talk about events that take place in the feature that kind of get you to curious, you know, thinking about what are they talking about? Something big must have really happened before or something between these two. And, you know, and so they shot this up in New York because one of our actors wanted to try to direct. And so he directed himself in it and shipped the footage back for me to edit. And so now we're trying to just see what we can do with it. We've got like the three festivals you mentioned. And then I've got it out, submitted to a number of them. I'm waiting for the big one, Sundance, to hear from next month. So
wait, it was filmed like remotely from you? You just had to like call and be like, how's it going, guys?
Yeah, it was one of those things where like I really wish I could have been there, come up to New York, you know, I really wanted to see what Gerald Kaiser, who's the co-director and he's the main lead actor, I wanted to see what he would do with it, you know, because I mean, the good thing about the actors that I cast in this film, you know, I seemed to pick just the right people because, you know, they all knew that this was a project that was trying to get financing, but they all became very passionate about it. So we've all stuck together, you know, during this process, you know, and everyone is just so anxious to make it, you know. So to finally have a short film, at least, that has some of the characters in it was really cool.
How long have you been with this core cast of people? Like,
ever since, I think we did the casting. It was pretty quickly, and I think it was that same year, 2008, because I finished it in early in that year, and then we did like a 6-month casting process. We went, you know, casted here in Birmingham, and we did casting in New York, international submissions. You know, I really wanted to take my time and really find a really good, solid cast for it.
So
all we're hoping now is that, you know, maybe this short film can do that same kind of thing, get to the right, you know, industry people can see it or something like that, and they can see the potential in it, because we've just been running into one roadblock after another, because that was the other thing. The economy collapsed just about the time I was trying to go look for financing for this movie, so I was like, isn't that great timing?
Not for like, hey, give me some money to play around with and it might make you money.
Give me some money to make a film.
But I think that's a really excellent angle to take, like the aftermath. I was going to ask you, like, oh, was it after? And it literally is. I mean, oh, sorry. And that's smart, dude. I mean, that's a good angle to take. You're like, I got to slice off a piece of this pie. Let me frame it here after, you know, the main events boil down.
Well, as opposed to, you know, going $150,000 in debt or, you know, taking on investors that are highly leveraged.
Or compromising your image, definitely, you know, your concept.
Yeah, definitely a good idea. Well, we will link it on everything we got. Thanks for staying up with us.
Absolutely, man.
We appreciate it. And before we let you go, give us your pick for Oscar replacement. Who would you like to see, and who do you think we will wind up seeing?
Well, it's interesting because they're getting. See, one of the things why they want to get the host so soon is because it takes a while to get that show prepared. So what I'm thinking is that I would love to see Robert Downey Jr. I think he's an Every time you see him on an awards show, he is absolutely hilarious, and he would absolutely control the room, and I think he would be a great... I just hope they don't go for a straight, you know, comedian. Or not a comedian, I'm sorry, but like go for an actor like they did with... last year with Anne Hathaway and James Franco.
That was the worst Oscars I have ever seen, and I have seen every Oscar.
Because they know how to control a room, and actors, they don't necessarily know how to control that environment.
They're like cut now, right?
Exactly. I mean, it's just a complete... So, and I would love to see him get Billy Crystal, and that the reason that I think maybe they would go to him, because he has expressed interest, and he would be able to get up to speed really quickly.
Yeah, he's the go-to guy, right?
Yeah, he'd be a great go-to guy. He's done this before, you know, so they would be able to get in. And everybody loves him. You know, when he made that appearance last year, you know, look at the standing ovation he got. And about that point in the telecast, after we'd put up with James Franco and Anne Hathaway, everybody was like, Billy, come back.
Yeah.
Rescue.
You're so right. I really thought they were both completely stoned for the entire... I mean, James Franco looked like he had a blunt, like, in his front pocket. It was terrible.
Yeah, you can tell from the very beginning that he was... It was from the very point he first uttered a word on stage, I was like, oh, God.
Yeah.
He absolutely doesn't care about this at all, and it's going to come off the entire telecast.
So, Jason, before we let you go, tell me a little bit about your podcast, because I want to do a little cross-promotion here. I saw on iTunes you have like a gaggle of episodes, man, like hundreds.
We've been going for – actually, my five-year anniversary show is going to be on the 21st of this month.
Wow.
So I've been doing it for 5 years on Blog Talk Radio, and it basically was – I've been writing about the Oscars, you know, for years in various venues, either, you know – I used to do it on sweet101.com on the internet. Mm-hmm. And then I finally just decided, when I saw this Blog Talk Radio coming along, decided to do a podcast. Just got that going, and it's grown since then. And it's once a week on Monday nights, 11 Eastern, 10 Central is our usual time. And when the Oscar season comes about, there's usually special shows, you know, as we cover the Oscar season. And
so you
like
do
that.
A live cast, and then you throw it up on the iTunes after the fact, obviously.
Yeah, they actually do all that automatically. You know, I just record the live show and it goes up on iTunes. And
nice, man.
Yeah, well, so all the archives are out there. So yeah, I think it's been about 260 some shows so far.
Yeah.
Well, we're gonna link everything on this particular episode, all your websites, and then on nerdaristocracy.com, we'll go ahead and add a permanent link for you on our front page under Allies.
Right.
On the right-hand side, so we will put you up permanently and then get all your sites and whatnot listed below this episode.
We'll give you the golden package.
Listeners, proletariat, go to beautifultorment.com, watch the trailer, share it with your friends. If there's a festival appearance or screening near you, go check it out. Jason O'Brien, thanks so much. And we will talk to you soon, my friend.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jason.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks.
Okay, folks. Wow. Two for two. Two episodes in a row with a guest. Thank you, Jason, again.
Yes, Jason. Very knowledgeable on all things film. Welcome back to the show. Episode 40 rolling along.
Rolling.
So tell me about your week, Ryan, since we didn't catch up about your week last time, and it's kind of become a thing now. I ask you about your week and feign interest.
Yeah, I think Jay Brown really nailed it, where like I'm sitting back on a couch and you're like, so tell me about your week.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, I had to open my cup because I am out of beverage. Even though Ryan has asked me if I want something to drink 37 times.
I practically pressed it upon you. I'm so happy. We are getting rid of our dog.
Are you?
Yes, we are.
Wow, dreams really do come true.
If you keep on with your eyes shut, hoping they do.
What was the final straw?
Me going on the crate. Me doing everything.
Okay.
As it has been since getting this dog.
Right.
This is my dog. I walk this dog in the morning. I walk this dog at night. I clean up this dog's pee. I clean up this dog's poo.
Mm-hmm.
This is my dog. I didn't want this dog. Craigslist, go on it the other night. The missus tried to get on it about a week ago, but she had some verification thing she couldn't navigate or refuse to. Or, you know, I know a large part of her doesn't want to hurt our child's feelings, so maybe she sabotaged that process herself so she wouldn't have to run the hatchet. But I'll gladly be the hatchet man. I was looking for the final solution. And I went through the process. The Craigslist had probably 10 people respond today, only charging $50 for this beautiful Pomeranian, complete with dog carrier, leftover food, food tray, walker. Get out of here.
Out the door.
Yeah. So we had to break it down to the kid today, tonight.
Right.
My wife was like, oh, you gotta tell her. I said, well, the deal was, I tell her you negotiate the transfer with somebody. I've had to negotiate the transfer with somebody, so she's like, oh, fuck you. Okay. So we both do it.
Okay.
Tell the kid, and we've mentioned several times, like, well, you know how we have to find a new home for Molly, because we're not here during the day. It's just boring, and it's in a box, so it doesn't pee all over the fucking place.
Right.
And she just kind of went solemn for a minute, and then looked at my mom, holy shit, my wife, and...
Freud!
Paging Dr. Freud! Break out the stogie. And then she just crumpled into my wife's shoulder and cried for a little bit, wept. And I was just like, okay, you know. And it's a very masculine trait, I think, to be like, this is the problem. Let's excise this right now.
Right.
You got a tooth that's loose? Let's get that off. Oh, that arm's got gangrene? Whack, whack, whack.
Yes.
To preserve the organism.
Very fatherly. You know? Yes.
Yeah. I'm preserving the organism of my brain by getting rid of this fucking little shit piss hound. So I'm very unsympathetic, but, you know, trying to be placid. And then there's a point to where I think the kid is just going down the road of sympathy that my wife is presenting, because my wife's expecting her to be really upset. And so she's delivering on that to a degree. But, I mean, that might just be my inner sociopath.
Right.
And then my wife has to go off to the hospital to follow up on some nursing stuff, and we'll just spend some time with her, make sure she's okay. So I promptly start setting up stuff and checking my email, and give the kid a bowl of ice cream, check in on her, two episodes into Casper the Friendly Ghost, and she doesn't mention the dog again up until going to bed. Still doesn't mention the dog, happy, goofing around, bouncing on the bed and stuff like that. So she's really good at suppression. Which is good. And
genetic, I'm sure.
Repress those feelings. Yes. They will only get in the way.
Never share how you feel, honey.
No, they are a weakness.
It only leads to further pain.
People will just take advantage of it. So some Hispanic family will be adopting the dog, and this was based on the numerous Craigslist ads. Oh, I want one for my girlfriend. What's up? When can I come by? And it's like, fuck you. You're not getting it.
Yes. You
know, oh, I want to give one for my grandson. Does it go with kids? I was like, well, if you want to get a dog for your grandson, you have to negotiate through the parents, so that might not be a good idea if you just go ahead and do this. So
yeah, because you don't want them bringing it back.
Yeah.
No. And wanting a refund.
No refunds. Fuck
and you.
You
say, hey.
All sales final.
All sales final.
It's been wiping my hands.
You pet it, you buy it.
Wipe my hands of the urine. And what the deciding factor was... this Hispanic lady who contacted me today, her daughter's birthday was today. So I was like, okay, this is pretty appropriate. So tomorrow, 3 p.m., bye-bye. No more me freezing my balls off in the morning.
That's true.
Obligatory walk.
Yes.
For the dog. Not that I enjoy that time. It's just to ensure it doesn't urinate all over the carpet.
Yes.
Again, in the same place. Or if I put down a doggy, like, pee on me mat, pees right next to it.
Sure.
Just to kick me in the face with its tiny Pomeranian paw.
Getting rid of it will surely show it who's boss.
Yeah, right? So that's the best thing I've done this month.
Gotcha. Well, I'm just hoping that my bad luck with electronics hopefully ends soon. This run I've been on, it was like my internet was down for several days in a row. Mm-hmm.
You've had a spate of things?
Yes, my digital camera broke while I was in the middle of a listing appointment on this house. I'm in the middle of the walking around the house taking pictures and notice that my camera's not focusing anymore. And go through all the menu options, changing stuff, blah, blah, blah. I've been around cameras for long enough to know, hey, something's wrong with the interior workings. Mm-hmm. It's a digital camera, so it's not something that I can fall back on my film school training to say, okay, well, the lens mount might not be flush, mm-hmm. or there might be something on the lens, or, you know, check the camera body.
It's just, this fucker's broke.
Yes. Yeah. When it comes to Japanese-made digital cameras, yeah. that you purchased for under $150.
How long have you had that camera? Might still be under warranty.
Probably 4 years, oh, 3 years, something like that. Yeah, it's a goner. It's a, as they say in South Louisiana, it's a gone pecan. So I'm trying to make it to Black Friday before I absolutely must have a digital camera.
Well, it's got to be black.
I can stretch it to Black Friday to where I can wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and get a decent deal on one.
You should be able to. I mean, your needs are relatively simple. You need it just for straight documentarian purposes.
Right.
Capture light.
Yeah. Stay, I'm not going to be sharp. You know, doing any crazy SLR kind
sports
of foolishness.
Photography. Yeah.
I don't need a, you know, 300 millimeter lens. All I really need is a camera to take pictures of houses that
doesn't,
you know,
blow ass. Yes. And as aforementioned before in previous episode, if the people at CSpire would get their shit together and give you an iPhone 4S, its camera would be good enough to satisfy that need.
That's true. But my hope for them truly getting their shit together is fading by the second.
What was up with your internet? Was it something on the cable company's end, or your router?
They said it was not, but naturally. I think it had to have something to do with the service, because, I mean, I have two computers in my house, mm-hmm. and neither one were getting service for shit. Everything was running incredibly slow. I had virtually no uploads, couldn't send any documents or any emails with attachments, which, when you work from home in my business, kind of mandatory.
Kind of essential, yeah.
So, but no, I mean, internet was lagging, digital camera broke, my digital scale broke. Not the one I stand on, but the one I weigh out, kitchen.
Oregano?
Yes. Or, you know, meatballs or steak.
Oh, you really use that in your kitchen?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So that broke on me. So it was just like everything I touched that had a wire in it broke or was not functioning properly.
That's your magnetic personality.
So I think Mercury must be in retrograde, because that's, you know, that's the old standby coast to coast AM in my head saying, okay, if electronics aren't working, then Mercury, the planet, is in retrograde. Wanted to specify I was talking about the planet and not the
element.
The element. So
Mercury in retrograde. It's, yes, also a good instrumental new age band.
There you go.
Should be.
Yes.
Yeah.
Should be a Pink Floyd cover band.
So has that passed now? I mean, is your internet back?
Internet is back. Have not had
camera's
any
still fucked.
Potential problems, knock on wood. So hopefully I'm over that hump. But it's definitely could not have come soon enough.
Yeah,
that's,
well,
for sure.
I you know, came out of my own retrograde with the headphones and the fucking coffee on the computer and stuff like that. So I'm totally there with you. I'm feeling that. And that's cost me about $120 to get out of. So
right. Well, what have you been nerding on? Practicing your sighing. Is that you've been working it's working out well.
I had
you.
A coworker like comment on that.
Really?
Yeah, because I was at my computer.
Just that extemporaneous
just that thing that's getting
life
thrown upon the soul.
Yes.
And I'm gonna be a great old man because I'm gonna be full of shit like that.
Yes.
No, I'm trying to think. Like, I don't really have time to nerd on anything, you know?
I do know that feeling quite
well.
I mean,
the most nerding on I'm doing is at this work, and I don't think I'm being compromised financially enough for the amount of nerding I'm doing. Sorry, am I losing you?
Sorry, what are you talking about? Well, you're sighing, I'm yawning, it's late. yeah, yeah. No, I said compromising.
compensated.
Yeah, you said compromised enough at work.
Oh, did I?
Yes, you Ooh, did.
There's another slip. I am being compromised somewhat in my design.
I was like, I didn't know it was that kind of job. Aesthetics.
And they're definitely not paying me enough for that.
Ryan, come in here. Damn it.
All right, is it another 2 o'clock again? Built a light box to photograph inventory items in, because we were pricing them online and they're very expensive.
Sure.
So I sat down with my mechanical pencil, a ruler, calculator, and I designed a 3-foot by 3-foot cube that will be a light booth that can also be collapsible. The yes. whole thing is assembled using Velcro, yes. and it's pretty tight. It's okay. nice. And I made it out of coroplast. You know what that is? Corrugated plastic.
I'm not familiar.
They make like signs for like vote for this dickhead, vote for that dickhead okay. out of little pieces. But they come in big 4x8 sheets.
Yeah.
So I
And where do you buy one of these at? A sign shop?
Sign shop. Okay. Some hardware places, some hardware supply places. On a sheet of paper, I drew out the dimensions of the different pieces. I would need a jigsaw out of this 4x8.
Right.
Left over with just a little bit, but just enough to be able to assemble this together. Went to Home Depot, got some Velcro.
On the clock?
On the clock.
Okay, got good.
Some Super 77, which is some spray adhesive stuff. Had to pay for it out of pocket, though. Because the boss, me and this other guy, were kind of working on this brainchild. And the boss is like, you want $50 for this stuff? No. Here. And this is literally what the boss does. He instructs somebody to clear a shelf off. There's your light box. And I'm like, Louis, you have a $12 million yes. facility.
Right.
You just cracked the seal on. The paint is still drying.
Yes.
I'm trying to help build something as awesome as that to complement it.
Right.
To get lighting from above and from the sides,
yeah.
something that we can have a strong e-commerce presence with and catalog your inventory.
Right.
And I'm shoestringing it as it is.
Yeah.
Okay? And this is a shelving unit that's literally outside of the garage
right.
where mechanics are going back and forth all day. People are yelling and screaming.
Right.
Fuck tripod, fuck lighting, stuff like that. And he just kind of looks at me and goes, okay. All right. Like... It's weird because I'm trying to gauge out the boss, you know.
But you still had to pay for it.
I had to pay $50. Yeah. But this other guy
refunded.
This other guy is talking to. We're going to go halfsies on it under the precept that when we're done with it and it takes really awesome photos, yes, we will be recompensated.
Okay.
We will be. Okay, if we're not, I'd be horribly shocked if we're not.
Yes.
It's just kind of one of those good faith things. Like, I know what's better for you than you do right now.
Yeah.
But I mean, this guy, I mean, he's running a whole fucking company. He's got a lot of shit to think about.
Yeah.
Pictures for him is like, well, put it on concrete and take a picture of it.
Yeah.
Not going to work.
Yeah. You would just hope that someone would have a broader.
Well, they do. This guy I've aligned with, Brent, he's very. In sync with, like, let's put the polish on it, you know,
yeah.
let's do it right. And and that's good to kind of have him in my corner, and he's been there for a while.
Sure.
So that's interesting, and that's one of those things that I refuse to compromise on, you know. Some of the design work I've done, too, like the sales guys that sell the trucks, mm-hmm. and they are salesmen.
Sure.
They're reprehensible creatures
yes.
of humanity.
Yes.
And they have the design to match. And they're like, oh, okay, well, we want an ad with a gigantic stop sign and then, like, red and black warning border around it to, like, get somebody's attention when they're flipping through a magazine. I was like, that makes me hot. That makes the hair on my arms rise and the front of my forehead rise in temperature. It creates a warning.
Right.
I want to go into shock.
Yeah.
You're hitting somebody with very negative imagery.
Right. Yes.
And then, like, please read me?
Yes.
No. You know, I can show, like, a dead kid hacked up in pieces, and it's going to make people stop, but...
Yeah, the psychology.
And I actually had to, like, go back and forth, and this sales guy that's, like, 58 years old, I had to be like, I'm going to do something else.
Yes.
I've been here 5 weeks. Here's my penis.
Right.
You know, which is dubious because these guys make a shitload of money, more money for the company, easier to circle on a board than I do.
Sure.
So it's one of those things, like, I'm putting it out there where the last guy is just bending it over and taking it. Like, okay, what do you want? Okay, I'll do it. You know, and I'm like, no, I'm going to be on top because it's going to be better.
Right.
And you're going to like it more. And I did up a copy of what I wanted and got everybody nodding their heads and saying yes. So this is good. It's not a power play for myself. It's what I truly believe is better, you know, aesthetically and as from a marketing standpoint.
Right.
So we'll see, you know. I continue to have a job.
Well, have you had much Netflix time? I know it's been limited if you have, but
I mean,
have you been able to watch, like, Megan is Missing or Clay Brothers or anything like that?
No, I saw it at the Clay Brothers. I did The Fly, the Cronenberg movie.
Right.
I was very good with that. Started Videodrome, which is really disturbing. Need to finish that. Been enjoying some How It's Made.
Yes.
Remember that show?
Yes, I do.
Awesome.
Yes.
Getting the kid into it. The kid loves How It's Made. I love How It's Made. So that's some good quality time.
Yeah, that's some good nerd television right there.
Oh, yeah.
I have been nerding. My OCD has been going wild the past few weeks, which, in all seriousness, it has me worried because it's like I can see it kind of increasing as I get older. So I'm worried that, like, when I'm 40 or 50, it'll be, like, out of control. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Hard to...
Don't obsess about that.
Hard to manage.
What are you... How is that
materializing? I think the most prominent area is, like, before I leave the house, it'll take me 20 minutes, literally, to leave. Like, making sure I have everything, making sure everything, all the light switches are off, making sure all the doors are locked, making sure all the windows are closed, going back through every room in my house, making sure I have absolutely everything I need. What happens if I leave and I don't have this? You know, that kind of stuff. It seriously, I mean, you've been in my house, it's fairly small, and it takes me 20 minutes to leave, like, my house from the time I'm actually ready, you know, showered, teeth brushed, clothes on, keys in hand. Okay, now I'm ready to leave. From that point to the time I'm getting in my car is about 15 or 20 minutes.
Wow.
So it's...
A couple of suggestions. Do you ever open your windows?
Yes.
Right now?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Here's what you do. Help yourself out by kind of cutting that in half. What I mean is this, like, after you've done your night ritual of, like, eating dinner, giving yourself time to digest, go ahead and think, I'm going to help out my future Jonathan.
Right.
And get the shit that you won't need the rest of the night, but you'll need tomorrow,
right,
kind of prepped, boom,
sure,
on the table. Line it out kind of like a prop table,
yeah,
you know, and so you can clearly see each item.
Well, see, that's the problem with OCD is rationally I can think, okay, well, you know, I'm going to this business meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I need this client's folder.
Mm-hmm.
I need my camera, mm-hmm, and I need my realtor key and a pen. But in my head, I'm thinking, I need my nasal spray, I need my eye drops, I need my Kleenex, I need my kangaroo cup, mm-hmm, I need my wallet, I need my pen and my highlighter, because what if I want to highlight something, mm-hmm, you know, blah 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 blah.
Do you have like a little man bag? I have one of those. With,
I,
like,
do. It's a plastic Walmart bag, and it's got everything in it. But,
plastic Walmart bag.
Yes.
But, oh, fuck that.
But then I, like, you know, I take that stuff out at night and I use it during the day, so it's not like it always lives in the bag.
No, you need a shoe shine bag, something like that with a zipper, about yay big, you know, about a foot long, 4 inches tall.
No.
Go spring for one of those. No, really, it'll help you, because if you know where that is, then you know where all that other shit is, and you can have it live in there. And if you need to use it in the bathroom, you take the whole bag with you. Boom.
Yeah.
It's right there. So in the morning when you're all, like, wiping the sleep out of your eyes, you can just scrape it up, throw it in there, and move.
Right.
So I got to carry spare contacts myself, because fuck, if I'm out of the house or like shooting a film or something like that, and I got a contact that goes, I'm fucking screwed, dude.
Right. But I feel, you know, I'm trying to get better by like paring down. I'm in the middle of this process where I'm going room to room, mm-hmm. and I'm going through everything, mm-hmm. every cupboard, every closet, every drawer, and saying, okay, what do I not need in this? What have I not used in a year?
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Yeah.
And once I get
that
rid of...
That can be tough.
Yeah, it can. But once I get rid of that, I think it will be easier once I'm more organized and everything has its place, then I can say, okay, well, this is... I think it will be easier for me at that point to do what you said and say, okay, this bag mm-hmm. lives here. Mm-hmm. And this stuff lives in this bag. So if I need anything out of this, this is where I come.
Right. Yeah, I think those are different tactics towards the same goal of simplification.
Right.
And I think they can be done independently of each other because that one bag won't be anywhere. It'll satellite around. I mean, it'll either be in the front room or on your, you know, bathroom. Bathroom sink. But getting rid of stuff, you know, I whenever I think about, like, do I need this? Like, I was fond of this at one time. Mm-hmm. This reminds me of this one ex-girlfriend of the fifth grade or some yes. bullshit like that. It's hard for me to let go of that because I enjoy that sentimentality.
Sure.
And I've had to challenge myself. And what I do is I conjure up the image of a scene from the... not the Dark Crystal. Not Legend, the David Bowie Labyrinth. Thank you.
Okay.
From Labyrinth, when towards the end of the movie, she's going through different areas and she finds that one little shriveled lady that has like a bunch of shit piled on her back. You yes. remember that scene?
Yes.
And then they like go into her room in the contemporary times. She's like, oh, here's your teddy bear. Don't you love this? And she starts piling shit on the protagonist right. to try to weigh her down with her own past. And so that is a good mental link for me. Like, I don't want to be one of those people that are like hoarding and kind of keeping sure. all this shit from the past.
Yeah.
And so that kind of helps me be like, no, I can let this go. And from time to time, I'll be like, oh, man, I wish I had that XYZ. But
yeah, the past couple of nights I've been going through, like, you know how you accrue the stack of newspapers, like you buy a newspaper on Sunday to look at the Best Buy ad, but you don't want to throw the newspaper out. You say, I'm going to read this newspaper. So you set it in the corner, and then 10 days go by and you got two more newspapers sitting on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And before you know it, you've got 8 newspapers sitting in a corner, sitting in a stack.
And then you think, damn, I'm not serving those newspapers. You know, what they need to be done,
yes.
my intended thought. But I don't do that.
But see, a lot of people can walk over there and pick up that pile of newspapers and throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
But with my OCD, I have to read I have to go through those newspapers. Mm-hmm. Like, it is literally a compulsion.
Yeah,
like, I have to make sure that I have absorbed all the information I want to out of those newspapers and that there's nothing in there of imminent importance.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to miss an ad for a Chris Rock free show tomorrow down the street from my house with free Crown Royal and, you know.
Like that last one.
Yes.
You need to start challenging yourself more. You need to kick your own ass. You need to put that thing in the corner. And if you don't get to it in a week, you need to just make yourself throw it away.
Yeah.
Don't really get the newspaper. I'm really unaware of several things.
Yeah.
I have some news readers online.
Sure.
And I'll check the websites every day. If there's anything drastic, I'll see it or somebody will tell me about it.
Yeah, but see, it manifests, my OCD manifests mm-hmm. itself like on my computer too. Like, yeah. you've seen my bookmarks.
Yeah.
I bookmark everything. Like, if it's remotely interesting to me, I'll bookmark it. And then it'll sit in my main bookmark folder yeah. until the twice a year when I go through
It'd
and
like,
file
what
it.
What the fuck is this?
Yeah.
Oh, I vaguely yeah. remember that.
So
yeah.
it's like, it's really hard. And I bookmark more than I have the time to go back through and sort because I'm so busy. So it's like... You know, between doing it at the house, I have like 2 years of Sports Illustrateds, okay? Mm-hmm. And Sports Illustrateds come out once a week.
Wow.
And so I'm going back through them and cutting out pictures of all my, if I have a friend who has a favorite sports team, like I have a friend that likes the Raiders. So I've been cutting out, going through all my old Sports Illustrated, cutting out pictures of the Raiders because I used to make these tables. You know what I mean? And
like a collage table.
Yeah, decoupage. Yeah, exactly. And so I say I'm going to make them a table at some point. So I'm going to cut out all the pictures of the Raiders. And then I do that for the Dolphins. And then, of course, I do it for the Saints. So, like, I'm doing that, but it's a laborious process. And it seems like I can only do three or four a night before I get sick of it. And I've got a stack of 100 of them.
You need to just save the swimsuit issues and get that person a fucking gift certificate.
See, it's funny because the swimsuit issue, I came across it last night. It was the one fucking issue that I had absolutely no interest in. It was like...
Your priorities are messed up.
I was like, boy, there's no, you know...
There's just all this tits and
there's,
ass.
There's
what
no
the
football pictures in here. Like, you know, come on. If I want to look at porn, I'll turn on my computer and look at porn. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's too easy, though.
I don't... I'm not 11, so the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue just doesn't quite hold the luster it used to.
I wish it did. I feel that, too. That's another issue. No, I've had some OCD in the past myself. I won't recommend the route I took of having a child.
Right.
Because that, that really helps. And a good amount of it.
Yeah, you would think, but my dad had really bad OCD, and having two kids didn't help him. He just kind of passed it on to both of us. So
yeah, well, he offloaded some of it.
Yeah,
and
for
he
sure.
probably condensed what he had. You know, he probably had 80% more than he does now. I used to do a thing with objects. I still do this. Like, depending on the state of mind I am, I'm in. I will like align objects.
Sure. Yeah.
To make sure they are equally distant and like their tops are all
leveled. Go from top to biggest to smallest, left to right.
Absolutely.
Like if there's five jars and there's a ketchup bottle, a mustard bottle, a mayonnaise, you know, like I will line them up
by volume, and,
tallest
yeah, yeah.
to smallest, left to right.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I would do that with my toothbrush. Like I would brush my teeth at night and put it in the little brush receptacle. And I would get something that would tell me that it's not right.
Yeah.
And I would have to clock and rotate that toothbrush.
Sure.
I don't know why. And it wasn't one of those things. It wasn't like lined up with the sink basin or something like that. It was just which way
just
it was
a feeling.
Fucking rotated.
Just a,
yeah.
Just a feeling.
And it's just like built upon some kind of superstition, you know? And I just literally had to like go for it one time and just like fucking pump my hand and walk away.
Right.
And I still thought about it. I was like, man, I really should have rotated that toothbrush.
Right.
Like that toothbrush is going to be so pissed off at me. And so thankfully I've done less and less of that. And you got to start kicking your own ass.
Yeah, I will. All right, well, I guess that's going to do it for episode 40. Thanks for joining us, folks. Hope you enjoyed it. Back-to-back shows with guests. Who knows what next week will bring, but we hope you're listening no matter what. Thanks so much. We'll catch you then.
Yeah, and I plan to have Jason back in the future. I want to have a long nerd movie talk with that guy because he knows a lot more than I do and can probably educate everybody.
Yes.
All right, folks, till the next time then.
You just got your asses whipped by a bunch of damn nerds. Nerds!
Nerds! Nerds!
Nerds! I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.